Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. This is Brenda Moreau, and in this episode, I'm going to share some more thoughts on intervening when you hear a projection made in a session by a child patient. And this time, I'm going to consider negative projections. I'll start by providing an overview of projections and how they are especially helpful in the development of empathy. I'll discuss how you might see them in a therapy session by providing a fictional example. And then I'm going to share with you something that is difficult to consider. And that is, what happens when the negative projection is directed toward us as the mental health therapist? I'll share what I do along with the reasons in order that you will have more understanding to inform your own responses. As I've mentioned before, for this podcast, we are lucky to have audience members that include those curious about psychological concepts, practicing therapists who would like to add to their skills, and students considering a career in psychology, among others. All are welcome, and I'm glad you're here. If you'd like to learn more about projections after you listen to this episode, a note that I have discussed them a few times throughout the podcast. I introduced the concept of projections in episode 1. In episodes 5 and 6, I provided some ways you can listen for a positive projection and intervene in support of an adult client. And in the two most recent episodes, for number 12, I described some of the research I did and explained some projections that were made by a child toward a therapy dog. And in number 13, I discussed how to notice and intervene when a child patient displays positive projections in session. Let's begin. Why are projections so important in mental health therapy? The behavior of projections is thought to be how we learn to empathize with others. It doesn't seem that way at first, though, because what we are talking about here is the idea that there is an internal experience, like a thought or a feeling, that is unknown and overwhelming, so it is projected onto someone or something else, as if it were something they were feeling or experiencing. Projections start in childhood and continue throughout the lifespan. As children, we begin to understand the experience of others better by projecting our own feelings onto another, and through this, we learn to understand similar states in ourselves. This is being recorded in the fall, and that means school just started. So there are probably some classrooms of kindergartners, and any age really, where people are learning to identify feelings and emotional states. At younger ages, it is very common for children to talk about a friend who is experiencing something that they actually feel. It is like the feeling state is too big for the child to hold, so they project it onto their friend. A fictional example that we might hear in our offices this week could be something like, "Yeah, my friend was being bad at recess today." The negative projection here is that the friend was bad, and I want to learn more about the context. So I'm going to reply by narrating back the statement with a question tone at the end. Your friend was bad at recess today? Yeah, he was mad at this other kid, so he got in trouble for calling him a name, and then he had to quit playing the game. Oh, I might ask, what makes people mad at recess? Notice here I am not sure if my patient is talking about himself also having the experience of either being bad or being mad. Working with children is fun in many ways, and particularly in these episodes from school, you never know who is going to be whom in the story. So I am doing two things in this statement. By using people, I am opening up the subject and asking in a general way, what makes people mad? Which is also taking the pressure off of reporting the exact event. My thoughts are that this lets the patient tell me what he may have done that was bad, or what makes him mad at recess, or continuing talking about his friend. Like something like this. Well, this one kid really wanted to win, so he was cheating, and then everyone got mad at him and called him names. I try to intervene in genuine ways and also honor that all the kids are likely doing the best they can at recess. I have a guess that the patient in front of me was also calling names because of the way the end of that statement changed to everyone got mad. But I still don't yet know who my patient is in this scenario, and for that matter, later this week, he could be a different child in the story because this is something that is playing out during recess all over the nation each day right now. So I might say something like, oh, sometimes it is hard when everyone wants to win the game. Ideally, this is helpful to my patient gaining empathy because we are exploring the reasons the children at recess may be motivated to take certain actions. In this case, the desire to win the game. Therapy now becomes a safe place to explore all kinds of reasons people do what they do, and we don't have to name them something like bad when they do it. In this fictional example, the child is already considering a variety of perspectives by explaining that some kids get mad at the ones who are cheating, but they are cheating because they want to win. And in this story, it is the name calling that got someone in trouble. So he may be navigating what the bad actions really were. Was it the cheating, the name calling, or the wish to win? Sometimes all of those actions get labeled bad. So he's already taking strides toward developing empathy because he is demonstrating that he can see a couple different motivations or perspectives. As a therapist, I want to slow down this story and further empathize with the motivations of each and how difficult it is when they all want the same thing, to win. And most importantly, I want to get away from labels like bad, as those stop the exploration and thus the development of empathy. So if the theory is working for us, this is how it goes. Humans start by projecting these big feelings onto others, and then eventually we realize that we identify with them ourselves and we reclaim them in a way. The fictional patient's reclaiming could be that he acknowledges either verbally or just mentally on his own that he also has a wish to win the games at recess, and that he can see why someone would be motivated to consider other actions if they don't win. When we can distinguish between what is us and what is other people, we start the process of empathy because we can now better understand the experiences of others better. And we can imagine what it is like to be in their world. And we may realize that in a similar set of circumstances, if someone thought we were being bad, we may likewise have had similar reasons for our behaviors. And that is why I try to ensure I listen for projections to be made in therapy and intervene in this way. Now I would like to discuss something that I think most of us as therapists would rather not think about. And that is what we will do when someone says a negative projection toward us. Negative projections are similar to positive ones in that they are often spontaneous things, maybe about your office or about you directly. In general, it is rare for someone to state something like, you're stupid, so you have to pick it up by context. And many times, child patients will call other adults names, especially when they are frustrated about homework or chores or something along those lines. I am not a therapist who assigns therapy homework, but when I hear child patients saying things about their teachers or other adults in their world, I usually consider those as potentially being about me. And I would invite a discussion, something like, you're saying that today in your class, your teacher didn't understand what you were saying? I wonder if I might be missing what you're saying right now. But on occasion, the negative projection does get directed right at me. Projections can be difficult to recognize at first, in part because they usually are not a conscious behavior by the patient. For me, I am starting to distinguish a projection by how it feels to receive it, and not necessarily what was stated. Negative projections feel like a strike across the body. There's even sometimes a burning sensation when the blow hits you. It's a statement, but it can feel like a blow. When this happens, it is so natural to want to defend oneself. So once I recognize that sensation, I try to think about what is happening in session at that moment therapeutically. And the way I go about that usually is to try to determine if my patient unconsciously felt the need to attack me there. Is there something that is needing to be defended? Ideally, therapy is about trying to help patients realize things about themselves, and if we are in a terrain that is sensitive, they may want to discuss it, or at least think that they want to discuss it, but they may also have a fierceness about protecting this vulnerable emotional space we are trying to explore. So I try to consider where the blow came from, where the negative projection came from, and why. But as it hits, the main thing I do is take a breath and try not to retaliate. That can be difficult when I do feel like I might understand why the negative projection occurred toward me, and I can go in with my interventions too quickly. Aha! You're worried about what I said and what it means. That's why you said this negative statement toward me. Hopefully that's not a direct quote, but you get the intention. That immediate interpretation is a way to assert control in the session if I'm not careful. So I try not to do an interpretation right away. I try to stay neutral at best in this moment as I let the blow of the negative statement start to subside. As I've mentioned earlier in previous podcast episodes, I do think it is important that we are our full human selves as much as possible in the session. So if the patient recognizes across my face my reaction to the negative projection I just received, then I do say something like, ouch, or some kind of simple reaction to let them know it landed. And depending on the rapport I have with the person, it might be an ouch with a smile. That helps them understand I feel the intent in their statement, but I don't intend to return a similarly negative statement. This seems to lessen the tension quite a bit and often can soften the person to having a genuine conversation about what just happened. One thing that I think it is important to be able to distinguish, especially when we think we are receiving negative projections from child patients, is that sometimes children are just being honest, and they are just giving a sort of public service announcement of the things they assess. Comments about a new haircut, unusual smells in the office, frustrations with a broken toy or interactive activity are genuine assessments of something that the child sees. I think it is important to let these rest as they come out, because they are not a negative projection per se. They are an honest reflection of how they see their world. I find it interesting as therapists that so many times we are asking the child patient in particular to be honest and say how they feel. And then when they say something that we'd rather not look at, for example, maybe my haircut didn't really work out this week, or I do need to replace that interactive activity in the office, then we might want to admonish or correct them. And this is counterproductive to our treatment goals, where we are asking them to be sincere. This to me is different than a negative projection. It is just the truth as they see it. And if I'm asking them to be a full person themselves in session, I have to listen and accept what I hear, even though I may not agree. The other thing I think we need to be careful of as mental health therapists is to abstract a patient such that they supposedly cannot hurt us. You know, we can get into that healer mode a little much and decide that this is just what teenage patients do. They say mean things, they lash out, and it doesn't matter because I am a therapist and I am here to help them. And we get into a mode where we pretend like we are unaffected by the statements. That's what I mean by abstraction, that somehow I am doing my role as a therapist and the patient is doing their role. For me, I work psychodynamically, which means that whatever is happening outside of session tends to happen inside of session. And Melanie Klein has an idea here that has always been helpful to me, which is along the lines of, when you become the problem, therapy is working. And I think it applies here very well. And the other thing for me is that these things do hurt. And they hurt because someone whom we are providing care for just unconsciously lashed out in response to our provided care. A lot of times the process of abstraction is in the service of my needs so that I don't have to feel what just happened. And that removes me a bit from the relational dynamics of the therapy session. And it can become problematic because if we act like we are impermeable, everything is abstracted and that nothing can touch us, then that plastic defended stance is something now we are role modeling to our patients, which is exactly what we don't want to do, right? As a therapist, I am continually more convinced that the relational dynamics in therapy are a big part, if not the part, of what is curative. We are asking our patients to start being more relational. So to have that be one-sided in our offices, it already is somewhat because of the frame and the boundaries of the relationship. But if we completely close that off, especially when it comes to negative projections, I don't think we help them as much as we could. Because in contrast, if we help them understand, in a small way, what it is like to receive a negative projection from them and help explore the unconscious elements that may be urging them to say those things to others, we can help their social skills with relationships outside of therapy move along a lot more effectively. Because if they are saying these things to us, they are saying these things to others as well. And if they get a shut down, impermeable response from us, they don't get the opportunity to work that through in a related way, to work on the real things that are bringing it up. So when something happens in the relationship that is painful, I think it behooves us to acknowledge that and not abstract it out as though it is something that happens between patient and therapist. It is something that happened just now between the two people in the room. To acknowledge in some way what just happened helps the patient to become more related to me as opposed to somebody distant to me as an abstraction. That's tricky, of course, because we are in a patient and therapist interaction. And so there is some natural formality to the relationship that needs to be in place. In other words, the boundaries of that need to stay in place for therapy to be effective. So it is a bit of a tightrope exercise where you are walking the line between realizing what just happened and letting it affect you, but not getting overly intertwined in the relationship dynamics. We don't want to make the patient responsible for what just happened and our response to it. An unconscious statement was made, it was negative, and we had a response to it. I learned this from working with horses because the horses will have a reaction to anything that anybody does. So helping participants in equine-assisted services to understand that the horse is a being who has its own needs and is reacting to something they did in the barn, for example. In a very natural way, this helps participants see a lot more about relationships and their impact that they make either consciously or unconsciously, in those relationships. So similarly, in an office session, just keeping it to the natural stance of they said something and we were affected, and keeping an exploratory tone to understand what just happened and why, is the ideal that I strive to model in my office. But I have certainly made mistakes over the years, and I would like to tell you that it was all early in my training. Yet, on occasion, I can really get flagged by something and overreact. And in those moments, usually right when the retaliatory statement comes out of my mouth, I know that I'm going to need to repair something. One of the many helpful things that have come out of attachment theory is that it is the repair in relationships that makes them stronger. It is not that we never have a rupture or a problem in a relationship. It is how we repair it that strengthens the bond. And this has been my experience. As long as I consciously do repair something that I've said, and I let it live over a few sessions, that helps a lot. What I mean by that is when something like that happens, when I might overstate something or overreact, there is a way that the pattern is going to repeat. And you want to notice it and bring it up later, so that the tension continues to dispel out of it. So if I have something where the repair was made, maybe I overstated or overly defended myself too strongly before I realized and took a break to stop it, then I just name it. I narrate what I just did and I apologize. And then if we run into that territory again in the next few sessions, and more than likely we will, I just bring it up again. Oh yeah, here we are talking about it again, similar to how I said something in last session when I overspoke and something like that, and then I apologize again. And usually the person, no matter what the age, is saying something like, yeah, it's okay. I might be overly apologetic, it is in my nature, but there are two reasons this is important to me. The first is the power dynamics cannot be underestimated, especially when we are working with child patients. Showing them that I am aware when I make a mistake and willing to admit it is important. And another subtle thing is this. I don't think it is only the apology that is repairing, although that is a huge part of it. To me, it is the common understanding that we are on sensitive ground, and it is both of us knowing where we are at and both of us knowing the other knows where we are at, that also seems to be really healing. So I think it is important to verbalize and acknowledge this in session when we see it. Lastly, you may be wondering, wait a minute, you don't teach child patients to be more respectful? You let them say negative things to you? As a therapist, I feel my role is to help the child patient explore why they are doing or feeling the things they are doing or feeling. I am trusting that there is a group of other adults, parents and guardians, teachers and coaches, and more, who are teaching the child to do things and to behave or not behave in certain ways. In my office, we have basic expectations for safety toward all beings in session, but I don't have a specific set of rules, especially of what people can say. Essentially, I've learned that if I treat patients with respect, I will mostly receive respectful treatment. In the case of negative projections, the idea is they are mostly unconscious in nature. So while they may be something stated negatively toward me, that is often not the intent. So for me, it is not something to be corrected as much as it is to be understood. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.